Hello again, Chris Lee, Graham Doty, Alfred Esmond of Southeastern 14. We got the College World Series final in front of us. We got the two final teams, which I happen to think are the best two teams in the country, in Texas A&M and Tennessee. We will talk about both those teams coming up. Before that, a reminder, our content presented by Bet Online, your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup playoffs this season. Every stat, matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino, get in on a game of blackjack or poker, unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today, get in on the action, use promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts here. All right, let's start with the Tennessee Volunteers first. They were the number one seed coming in the tournament. We know about that whole curse thing where if you're the number one seed, you don't win the national title, but the Vols are right there knocking on the doorstep, needing two more wins. Well, we'll start with the offense. I don't know what else you say about this team. What's the home run total for the Vols now after yesterday? Are they up to 180 or we're close? Or
close to 180. Someone will comment and give us the exact number, but they're close to 180. It's going to be hard to catch LSU, but who knows with how that team hits. Don't count them out with it.
Yeah, we've seen the ball get out there a little bit. You've got what? Four guys now, Kavaris Tears, Dylan Dreiling, Billy Amick, and Christian Moore, all with over 20 home runs, Moore over 30. I run a Bill James formula for runs you create per 27 outs, and this is a day old. It doesn't include the game from Wednesday, but Blake Burke, 13.0 runs per 27 outs. Christian Moore, 14.3. Billy Amick, 10.2. Dylan Dreiling, 12.9. Kavaris Tears, 12.1. I mean, those are all elite numbers. You got a lot of other guys, you know, in the 7 to 8 range. You got guys on the bench in that range, too. I mean, we've talked about how Tennessee, it's not just most of the guys you see out there every day, but it's the guys they got on the bench that can hit, too. You kind of run out of things to say about this lineup that haven't been said all year. But, Alfred, I challenged you with coming up with some splits because, and we'll get into the particulars of A&M's pitching later, but their starters, Ryan Prager and Justin Lampkin, the two guys I think we will see start, are lefty. Evan Aschenbeck, their best reliever is a lefty. Everybody else a right-hander. But what do we know about Tennessee's lineup in terms of anything interesting that sticks out at you with platoon splits?
Yeah, there's some fluctuations between how their hitters are with righties and lefties. Now, I say I'm going to go through some of the big names, and obviously some are going to be worse depending on what handedness it is. And when I say worse, it's kind of like it's relative. Worse. Right, relative to what they're doing on the other side. For example, we'll just start with Christian Moore. I mean, the big name, obviously, that they've had all year. 372 against righties and then 393 against left-handers. So that's what I meant. It's like, it's not bad. Yeah. It's just like, it fluctuates a little bit in between. The biggest thing is his on-base percentage on both sides, on both hands, is really good. So it's still at 440 flat between the two of them. And that's just the biggest part, I think, with him and what he's able to do. And we've seen him hit the ball. He's been the best hitter during this entire stretch here in Omaha. So he's just going to leave an impact. You go up a little bit. Blake Burke, who's normally number two in the lineup, 388 against righties, 323 against lefties. So it drops a little bit against left-handed pitchers. The on-base percentage against righties is phenomenal, 452. If you look at the lefty on-base percentage, 380, a little bit below 400, still not bad by any means. He could flat out hit the ball just as much as Moore can practically. Billy Amick, it's a little interesting. He's the first one I think that drops below 200 or 300 in the lineup when he's facing lefties. He's at 288 when facing left-handed guys. The on base is 333. He is pretty much significantly better on the right when he's facing righties at 372 and 446 on base. Other big names to look for. I looked at some of, because we've talked about this a lot with Tennessee. They throw a ton of different guys in the DH spot. We saw yesterday Ensley DH'd and Tears was moved over, and they put Chapman in right where Tears normally would be. So some of the guys who are normally in the DH. Dalton Bargo, who when he plays has been on a tear. Let's see. Oh, I just had it. Here it is. 282 against righties and then 294 against lefties. So he's just kind of a consistent, solid hitter. That's definitely kind of balanced out, I think, over the course of this NCAA tournament. And then the on-base percentage against lefties, though, for him is phenomenal. 455 with OBP against lefties. So he's just going to be a tool in that lineup if they can get him out there. And I think at least in one of the first two games, he's going to be their DH at some point. I would be shocked if he isn't. Going down, the other guy DHs a lot for them. Reese Chapman, like I said, he played right field yesterday against Florida State. Significantly better against lefties. 467 batting against lefties, and then against righties, he's 276. On-base percentage against lefties, 550. That's unreal. He's getting on base over half the time he faced left-handed pitchers. So pretty much, I mean, the top of the lineup for Tennessee, you're just going to get a bunch of hits. I know A&M's pitching with Prager is going to be solid, but once he faces Moore, Burke, and Amick, it's going to be, you know, those three are going to get hits at some kind of fashion. So, you know, you kind of look down the lineup and see what you can get from the middle of the order. Guys like Curley and Ensley, what they do is going to be huge. But some of these DHs, man, I mean, when they're facing lefties, they know how to hit. And the two main ones this year have been Chapman and Bargo. And that's been the case. So Tennessee has the answer at DH, and that can be very pivotal this series. And then I guess since we're on the topic, we'll go over to A&M and have a look at their batting as well. The big names that stand out, I said this before we got on here, Grahovic and Sorrell were the two big names from last night's Florida win. They're pretty good on the left side when facing lefties, 352 and 314 respectively. Caden Sorrell's drops below 300 to 291 when he's facing righties. So that one's a little different. But, I mean, you look at the on-base percentages against all the pitchers they face, right around 400 or a little above 400. So they've been solid all year, and I think they're going to continue to have a big series. Jace Lavallette, significantly better against lefties this year, 389 and a 471 on-base compared to 295. That's still good. Aggie fans, don't worry. I'm not saying that. It's just significantly better on the other side. And then 450 on base when he's facing righties. So a little bit better against lefties, and that's going to be pretty key and something to watch out for as well. And then the other name I'll mention with them and the final name, I guess there's other hitters that are great on this team. Caden Kent, also really good on the left side, 400 batting, 471 on base. You go over to what he does on the right side, 259 batting, and then 397 on base. So still pretty good once again, but significantly better on the left side. And I guess, I was about to stop, but Jackson Appel, obviously a big name in their lineup that they've had all year. 491 on base against lefties, 435 batting. You look at the right side, it's 315 batting against righties, which is still solid, but way better on that left side. And that's kind of what ups his statistics overall as well. And the other name, since we're just talking about it, Hayden Schott's kind of the outlier to this Aggie lineup that seems better against lefties. He's better against righties. So I think it's a Texas A&M lineup that on paper isn't as powerful or kind of overwhelming as Tennessee's, but they're a team that can still hit the ball, and Tennessee's going to have to pitch their tail off when they play them.
In other words, Graham, a lot of guys that hit lefties, righties, whatever they throw out there. I mean, I think the one thing that stood, Amick's got some reverse splits that are kind of interesting, but I don't know. Did we really glean anything there in terms of something that it pops out? And again, let me remind you, A&M is going to probably start two lefties, and its best reliever is going to be a lefty. Tennessee is going to start three righties. I mean, if we count A.J. Causey as a starter, which technically he's not, but really he is in terms of duration.
I mean, I think for me, just – these are two of the top offenses in the country, so I don't think lefty-righty matchup will be that drastic of an impact. I mean, these two teams can swing it no matter what. You know, everybody's going to be juiced and amped up for this one, playing for a national championship, two schools looking for their first title. So I think everybody will be locked in and ready to go for a fun championship series.
Yeah, I think both teams can really hit, right? I mean, everybody knows what Tennessee can do. A&M, of course, most people know, lost Braden Montgomery, but you still got Gavin Grahovac, 22 home runs, Jace Lavallette, 28. And then you've got some guys that, like, Caden Sorrell had 10 home runs, had just over 200 plate appearances this year, had one in the game in which the Aggies eliminated Florida. Travis Chestnut was about a 40% of the time player on balance for the season, but he stole 17 bases. Had a 450 something on base percentage. He was really good. You know, we talked about what was the game, and I think against Oregon, where I think it was Ted Burton and Jackson Appel and Hayden Schott had like 8 hits between them. Mm-hmm. You know, they carried the offense that day with Montgomery out and Laviolette. I get that name wrong every time.
I definitely Jace get it wrong
Laviolette.
Too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not pronounced the way it looks, but right. In any case, I mean, and like even Ollie Camarillo hit a big triple in that Florida game. This is a lot. Caden Kent has been good when he's played at times. I mean, it's not the top end numbers that Tennessee's got in terms of what Moore and Burke and some of those guys are doing, but you know, throw Tennessee out of this lineup compares favorably with any other one in the country. Mm-hmm. And can really challenge you 1-9.
Yeah, I think they can. And honestly, it's going to come down to the handiness. I kind of like what Graham said. I just, you know, spat a bunch of long-winded numbers about righty versus lefty, that sort of stuff. And in the end, it's probably, we said this, I think we alluded to it at least last night. It's probably the best, most balanced World Series final we could have gotten out of any two teams. I think any other one, I think A&M would have been the favorite over any other team, but you know, Tennessee obviously is going to be the national title favorite coming in. And at the same time, A&M matches up well enough against them with their pitching and their own hitting to at least make these games close and possibly take games. So it's very well balanced. It's not, I like what you said, Chris, not necessarily the powerful number. A&M doesn't necessarily have the powerful numbers Tennessee has when it comes to the home runs and whatnot, but they have the on-base percentage, and they have guys who, despite the injuries, have just stepped up and have continued to push them forward. And it's hard to kind of go against that.
All right, we spent a lot of time talking about the bats both sides. Graham, what stands out to you in terms of the pitching both teams have?
I'll start with Tennessee. I thought it was funny last night in Tony Vitello's post-game press conference. The words he used, he said his staff, fresh as a daisy. That was the words and phrase that he used. So he seems very, very excited just with the arms that he's got. And especially after, you know, you get 2 days rest and, you know, he's going to feel even better. So I think he's really, really excited. And really, other than that, the very first Florida State game, Tennessee used 5 or 6 pitchers in that game. And then other than that, they haven't really
been
used
really good.
A lot of arms. Yeah. They haven't used a lot of arms. So they're excited. And then when you look at Texas A&M, like, I kind of think they're in the same boat. You know, you got to think Prager is going to go at some point, maybe not game one, but maybe potentially game two. I think he'll be at 5 days rest. So I think both of these teams pitching wise really, really have to like where they are, not only starting pitching, but also just their bullpen and the depth that each one has.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you're Tennessee, you're really hoping that Kentucky or Florida or whoever they were going to get in that Wednesday game was going to push them. That did not happen. Mm-hmm. You know, they threw, oh, good grief, Lampkin Wednesday night after he'd started, I guess, game one, and he came back and it was as good as he'd been in a long time. Struck out, I think, 9 over 5 innings. It went to Cortez. It didn't go well. They yanked him quickly and then went to Aschenbeck at the end where, you know, there were some hard hit balls off him that were foul that didn't show up in the box score. But I mean, other than that, he was probably the best relief pitcher in the country this year. So you're going to have a lefty heavy approach with Prager and good grief, Lampkin to start it. And then Aschenbeck coming out. Then everybody else that you're going to see, I think, is a right-hander unless they pull something that we didn't see. So I don't know. I think the pitch, you were wondering, like, is something going to happen where teams get pushed? But no, these teams are both going to be fresh with arms going into this. Again, we'll see what they do with Lampkin and Rager when they use him, but you're going to see them both at some point. Mm-hmm. So I think game one, we'll see maybe Stamos to open again with AJ Causey. And what do we think they'll do on the A&M side? Will they just go back to Prager, let him go game one? The last time he pitched was his 17th. He started that one. So it'll be what, the 22nd? That's probably enough rest to be able to go, I guess, Graham. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would think so. What that would be game two, right? So I kind of think, you know, national championship on the line. You know, it would be a lot for him to not want to take the mound for Texas A&M in that spot.
Well, I'm thinking they probably go game one, because if your other starter is going to be, you know, in other words, they started last night, Lampkin. So he's pitched after. So I'm thinking what they're going to do is they'll probably switch it up and go back to Prager, who was their number one all year. That was very poorly articulated, but that's what I mean. And I guess the pecking order is going to be Prager and then Lampkin is what I would think based on when they both last pitched.
Yeah, and the good news for Texas A&M, I mean, those are two guys who you want on the mound. So those are two of your best bullets and options. So, and against that Tennessee lineup and offense, that's a very intriguing matchup for sure.
I think the one thing we can be pretty sure of is Drew Beam will go in game two. His stuff was as good as I've seen it all year, Alfred. The fastball, I think breaking ball combo was – his breaking ball was as good as I ever remembered. His fastball, you know, a lot of times he will sit 92, 93. He was more 95, 96 in that one. So if you get that Drew Beam, you're feeling really good about things. And look, Drew Beam has been so consistent throughout his career. So it's relative. It's not like he's going to go out and give you a one inning, eight earned run start. When it goes bad for Drew Beam, it's more like, okay, he'll pitch four and give up three earned runs. Or he can do what he did the other day where he just shoved. So I'll be very interesting to see Tennessee. Do they go Causey to start, because that's what they've done all year? Do they go Stamos to start and see if he get better results? But I think you'll definitely see Beam in game two. And if there's a game three, you get Xander Seekers, who's pitched better than any of them lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the beautiful part about where Tennessee's at and kind of the advantage they have, because they haven't had to break a rotation at all during Omaha for anything. I think A&M had to do it a little because their situation's a little trickier just because they don't have Sadeo. And normally, we would see him, I wouldn't say guaranteed, but there would be a good chance if he was healthy, we'd see him game one or two if he was healthy. But, you know, with Tennessee, they don't really have to break out of it. And with Drew Beam, that, talk about Cinderella-esque. I mean, it's the guy who has the most starts out of anyone in Tennessee's history. And he has a chance, if the Vols take game one, to win the College World Series with his final start in a Tennessee uniform. That would be picturesque, to say the least. And he can do it. I mean, if he did what he did against North Carolina, high velocity fastball, hard moving breaking ball vertically up and down, it's challenging for these batters to keep up with it. And I'm looking at, just for the heck of it, his pitching splits too. His walk rate stays the same between right and lefties, only 5%. That's kind of towards being on the good side compared to the other guys in the staff. It's actually one of the best out of any of the guys in the staff. So he didn't walk a ton of guys. I would like to know what his walks were against North Carolina. He didn't walk that many. North Carolina struggled to get on base for the majority of that game. So, yeah, if you get that Drew Beam, you could get a Cinderella-type ending to his career, which would be a great story, I think, for him. And, you know, he's a guy that's going to get drafted at some point in July. So, you know, he's got great stuff. And if they get the good side of him, that's great. And if they don't and Texas A&M pulls it off, you get Xander Seacrest, who, like you said, Chris, has been the best guy in their rotation. And it's just nothing dominant, but it's perfectly managed. It's a perfectly managed pitching performance. That's a tongue twister. Sorry. But yeah, like I said, it's a perfectly managed performance. And it's just not allowing balls out of the infield, letting the defenders do their thing, which also I think is going to help Tennessee a lot, how they played defense last game. So the pitching for Tennessee, I would say, you know, maybe this A&M lineup gets to it, but expect great things from the Vols pitching because it's been that way throughout this entire tournament.
Yeah, wild cards for me on Tennessee, the pitching side. What do they do with Nate Snead? You made a really good observation last night that they were, I think, used him for a shorter stint last night. Snead has pitched 72 innings, give or take one or two. And he's been a guy that's pitched more like a starter at times. And I think his effectiveness has waned a little bit. Maybe shorter bursts, they'll get more out of him. I think they can afford to do that because Dylan Loy's pitched really well out of the bullpen in the postseason. He's a lefty. Kirby Cannell's a lefty. That it's just a different look. It's a slow breaking ball. It's 83-ish. And when you got those power arms, like you could even Marcus Phillips, you got to be careful where you use him because it feels like it gets a little straight and gets hit at times, but it's also 100. And if he's not walking guys, which he tends to do, you know, you throw him for a batter or two and then throw Cannell out and like the look doesn't get much different from a guy who tops out at maybe 85 and a lefty in Cannell to a guy that hits 100 in Phillips and is a righty. And the same thing for Snead, by the way. So there's that. I think Dylan Loy could be a wild card for them because he's pitched well. Andrew Binky, same thing. Lefty who's pitched really well. Aaron Combs, we haven't talked about him yet. A lot of people think he's their best reliever. Probably pitch for pitch their most effective reliever. So there's that. And I think the big message here, plenty of depth in terms of number of arms. A&M's got that too, though. Chris Cortez is electric at times. He's 100 with the fastball, but he's a little wild. Free pass rate around 17%. That's not great, but he's also got a strikeout rate around 36-37%. That's elite. We've talked about Aschenbeck, who just doesn't walk guys. He's not quite as dominant. But he's got a 22% ground ball rate, which when you got a 29% K rate, that's basically half the time either the ball is not getting hit at all or getting hit on the ground. That's probably what you want when you're playing Tennessee. And they got other guys. Brock Peary, right? He's been good. Weston Moss, right? He's been good. They've leaned more on Josh Stewart, who's pitched in big spots for them lately. Freshman numbers on the whole aren't great, but it feels like the performance later has been better. I use a lot of words there, Graham. Anything stands out to you with AM pitching that you're kind of watching in this tournament?
I kind of go back to just their first meeting in Hoover and, just kind of who started those games and just kind of what it looked like in that matchup. So, like, A&M in that matchup against Tennessee and Hoover, Prager got the start, didn't make it past three innings, was just kind of a little all over the place, three hits, two walks, two strikeouts. So, I mean, does A&M go back with Prager to face Tennessee for the second time? Like you said, bullpen wise, I think they'll be in good shape. And you mentioned Cortez, like he was wild last night, only threw eight pitches. They were all out of the zone. So, I mean, he is electric when he's on. So you got to think he'll be ready to go. And he wants to bounce back and have a good performance after what happened last night for Texas A&M in their outing. So, we've touched on it. I think both teams, I think each head coach has to be absolutely ecstatic with where they are starting pitching wise and what their bullpen looks like.
All right, let's get to picks. Alpha, let's start with you first. Who wins this? How many games does it go? And why does who you pick win it?
Probably the hardest picks. I mean, it's the championship, but probably the hardest picks we'll make all year, we've made all year. And I think both teams are very balanced. I think each game's going to be close. That happens. But the thing I think that kind of separates the team I'm going to pick from the other, I just think every time I've talked about Tennessee and I've said, oh, well, I picked Florida State to take that first game, mainly because of Jamie Arnold. And I said, Tennessee hasn't played pitching like that in a while, and Jamie Arnold was decent, but he wasn't great because Tennessee got to him just enough to make it a dicey game. And so that's kind of what stands out to me. It just seems like this Tennessee team is on too much of a roll, and they, not that this comparison kind of, you know, means a whole lot now, but they got to Ryan Prager a good bit when they played in Hoover, and they got him out of that game relatively early for how long we've seen Prager go. So if Prager does come out there, Tennessee can do it. And I think the Vols are going to take that first game because of that. And I think they're going to build up a big enough lead on A&M's starter to kind of, you know, to kind of play around a little bit once you see Ashton Beck, Cortez, and other relievers out there. So, and I think Tennessee's pitching with Causey is going to be well enough to keep that game close, but it'll allow the Vols to maintain the lead. So I got Tennessee game one. Heading into game two, I think Drew Beam's going to do it again. I really think he's going to kind of deliver that Cinderella ending I was talking about. So I think this Tennessee team, they've been due. Tony Vitello's been due all year. I got the Vols in two games, but two very close games decided by 2-3 runs or less.
Graham?
Ooh, you got close games. I'm going, I do think these are the top two teams in the country. Kind of felt that way pretty much from the get-go. I am going Tennessee. It would not surprise me at all if this goes three games, though, to determine the outcome. Again, we touched on Tennessee, their offense. They're so consistent, so good. You kind of know what you're getting there. By the way, if they do throw Causey at some point, you know, he did earn the win in that matchup in Hoover. He went four innings in relief and had seven strikeouts. So he was very good against Texas A&M when he faced the lineup. Here's the thing for me with Texas A&M. Schlossnagel, after the game, one thing he said, if I heard him correctly, he said Schott has been playing with a torn meniscus, which is mind-blowing. And we've touched on their injuries a lot. So just think about that. If Schott has been playing with a torn meniscus, that's incredible. Lavalette, you know, we touched on him. Schlossnagel was asked about his health after the game, and he said he kind of felt that he was good for the most part. There was one fly ball in right field, and Schlossnagel said, I don't know if that was the hamstring that caused him to not get to it or if he just wasn't going to get to it no matter what. So he feels that the extra 2 days rest will be huge for Lavalette. Here's the thing for Texas A&M. They lead the country in walks. If they're able to just do what they normally do with the, you know, in their approach, if they're able to draw some walks, they haven't really had that monster inning in Omaha. They really haven't. They didn't even really do it last night. They haven't had double digit hits or come close to it. They just kind of make the most of their opportunities. If they get a walk here or there and then get that huge hit, you know, that could be huge for Texas A&M. So I'm looking at A&M's health, like how healthy are they? But they're just so on fire right now. They have not lost a game in the NCAA tournament. They went 0-for in Hoover and then have been on fire since then. So can they carry over that momentum? And A&M, they've been doing this. Like Jackson Appel only has two hits in Omaha. Yeah. And if you want to win a championship, you got to have somebody that you didn't think was going to be on the radar step up. And so far, that's been Caden Dent. I mean, he's got five hits in Omaha. You know, they showed his dad, seemed like a million times on camera on TV last night. So I'm sure we'll see him a lot in the championship series. You remember when Kramer Robertson was at LSU? And
oh, my goodness. Kim Mulkey.
The camera always is on Kim Mulkey. So it's going to be a lot of that. So I think Dent, you know, if he continues to do what he's been doing, like that would be huge for Texas A&M. So I just think with Tennessee, like, you know what you're getting. They're so good. They're so consistent. A&M, you know, you just have a little bit more question marks. I think it's going to be a fantastic series. The ratings for the College World Series this year, they've been through the roof, and that's because you have a lot of big names in the tournament. And we got the same thing here. Fantastic championship series, two name brands, Tennessee, Texas A&M, should be a fantastic one. Again, I would not be surprised if it goes three games, but I'm picking Tennessee. They've been so good for so long, so consistent all season long. They're the more healthier team, so I'm picking Tennessee.
I picked A&M to win the whole thing before the tournament. And you made a good point I was going to bring up. A&M is the team of the two that's gone unbeaten. And, in fact, only one of the wins has been a one-run game. I think it's won five games by four runs or more. We tend to think of Tennessee as the dominant team, but that's fairly dominant performance in A&M's own right. And I do think A&M's top-end pitching is better, which was a reason that I picked them coming into this tournament. That said, it's not the same A&M team that we had coming into the tournament. The hitting had started to tail off a little bit already. That was before the Montgomery injury. We've got Jace Laviolette, who is playing with the hamstring injury, but you never know when that flares up. You got Shane Sadeo. I think that loss might even be more damaging than Montgomery because great pitching can stop great hitting, although with Tennessee, that's kind of a coin flip. You saw Jamie Arnold didn't do great in that regard, and neither did Prager when they played in the SEC tournament. And I don't know what that's worth. You see some teams that will dog it in the SEC tournament sometimes and then go out and win the whole thing. But bottom line for me, I tend to lean more on pitching. And while I think A&M's top-end arms on the whole have been better, Prager's been as good a starter in this league, not named Hagen Smith, but you saw some bumps. You saw a hiccup in that Oregon series where they picked him up. You saw Cortez come in the other night. Eight pitches, all balls, they yanked him. Aschenbeck wasn't quite as effective. Again, the box score line was fine, but they hit some balls hard off him. He and Cortez thrown a lot of innings. Now getting Lampkin throwing that well the other night, I think, helped. But Tennessee, in the meantime, with all the story with the lineup, you've seen some guys like Dylan Combs start to throw. Dylan Lloyd's who I meant, has thrown better under the radar. You've seen Marcus Phillips get used in spots. You've seen J.J. Garcia get used in spots. Andrew Binkie, same thing. I think Tennessee's got a lot of pitching depth. And A&M's lineup, even before the injuries, just had not hit quite the way that it did, say, in April. The production's still been great, but it's not been – it felt like for a while, every time those guys played, they were going to score 10, 11, 12 runs.
Right.
I see just a little bit of wonkiness with A&M on both sides. And I think in my mind, the significant injuries to three guys, even if Laviolette is still playing, we just don't I just can't believe he's going to be 100% going forward. That's enough for me to flip my pick in this one. But I think it's close. I think it's 2-1. If A&M wins this thing, it'll be back to where I picked them in the first place. It's just that they went out and Lampkin and was good again, and Prager was dominant like he was most of the year. But you can pitch so well to Tennessee all game, and you can make one or two bad pitches, and that's enough to beat you. I just think that's so much pressure. I will flip my pick to Tennessee again, and I think I've got some cover here because of the injuries, but no outcome would surprise me. So we've gone unanimous Tennessee, which means probably congratulations to A&M on your national title. But either way, we'll have fun watching it and breaking it down later. So, and I'm not a superstitious person, but man, we
me neither. You know, yeah,
after burying Florida so many times, you put limits on what you can discern. So in any case,
that's baseball.
That's baseball. We're looking forward to seeing some baseball this weekend. We'll be here to recap the games when they're over. For Graham Doty, Alfred Esmond, I'm Chris Lee of Southeastern 14, presented by Bet Online.